Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. My name is Don Allen. We are waiting for Mr. Edwards to get in the studio here. So while we're talking today, it was a chilly day outside, and we are going to have some music for you here shortly. We'll be right back.
Put your bad self, say it louder.
Hello? Hello?
Clear.
Phone's ringing. Yep. Got all kinds of people.
Okay.
Me. Hello? Hello?
Okay. Fair words. Oh.
Hello. How you doing, sir? Can you hear me? Hello. You're breaking up a little bit, huh? Hello.
I'm gonna call.
Call me. You gonna call me back?
Oh, hold on. Hey. Hold on a minute.
Hello? Okay. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Hello?
Hello?
Who is this?
Yes. Speak. I.
Don, you're fading in and out, man. Somebody else on the line.
Yep, I can't really. I can't hear him that good.
Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah, you're fading in and out. Don't have a good connection.
Okay. Is that better? One. Okay.
It looks like you're maybe booting it up, but, you know, we're, what now, 12 minutes into what's supposed to be the program?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, somebody else, some voice I've not heard before was saying, couldn't hear him. What'd you do, go into a third line or something?
No.
I.
St. Paul. Can you hear me, Mr. Edwards?
Not really, Don. You're breaking up. It's not a good connection.
Okay, I can hear you loud and clear. Why don't you go ahead while I work something out in the background here? Is that okay?
Well, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Well, it worked.
Yeah.
Then.
Okay.
I'm here. Okay.
Yeah, you come across a little better. Apparently, the rebooting is helping to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
We had a call coming in. Supposed to be coming in from Missouri at 8:35, so we've lost that one.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what do we got? See what we got. Go with what we got.
Yeah. Well, we had a Yeah, I don't know what's going on there with that. I hope that doesn't happen again. Well, Mr. Edwards, you know, tonight we're going to have an exclusive interview with the St. Paul City Council candidate for Ward 1, Terran Cruz. And he has called in. He's managed to call in. Let me see if I can actually get him on the line.
Yeah, why don't you talk to him.
He is not there. He is not there. We have lost him also.
He must have been who I heard on my line saying he couldn't hear clearly. So,
yes.
His call has been lost. Well, we'll just have to go ahead what it is. What are some of the other items we got?
The indictments released today, downtown, a big press conference. That happened today at a kind of a big dog and pony show. I understand that some of our leaders might have been down there, Mr. Edwards. Would that be the case?
No, there weren't. There weren't any. There wasn't a single community person anywhere to be seen. These were all law enforcement, city chief of the St. Cloud Police Department drove down. He was there. His department was very much involved in breaking this ring up, if you will. Blair Anderson, Chief Blair Anderson, African-American, and the first African-American chief of the police department there in St. Cloud, Minnesota. His department had a significant role. Federal agents and et cetera were there. Minneapolis Police Department had a significant role. Deputy Chief Arredondo was very much involved. Andy Luger, the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, basically headed everything off. There were seven individuals who were indicted, and over a period of a week were rounded up, if you will. Their names will be certainly in tomorrow morning's edition of the Trib and been on TV. They've shown pictures of them, et cetera.
Yeah.
These are basically, these guys are Taliban and TNGs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, allegedly moving, you know, a fair amount of dope and drugs. Operating, as I said before, operating in Minneapolis, St. Paul, St. Cloud, Fargo, Moorhead, and Duluth. Don't know how much money they were really handling or et cetera, but apparently been involved in a lot of violence. Some saying that the Taliban have been broken. That's not true. The leadership of Taliban is still effective and on the streets. In fact, information coming forward now indicating that there are a couple of confidential informants inside of the both organizations cooperated with the authorities. This has they've been looking at this for over a year. And this goes back to information provided to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Some say in Washington, D.C., we've heard that they're saying that some of your leadership, if you will, in the so-called African-American leadership groups were very much involved. In fact, one pastor went up to St. Cloud to work with the police up there on apprehensions and et cetera. So, you know, I guess the Star Tribune will have some features of it tomorrow, probably more than the TV stations per se, though the stations are, you know. I think you picked up some intel that a reporter for Channel 11 was trying to get folks in North Minneapolis to talk about it.
Yes.
There was a great reluctance. I don't blame them because the potential is still out there in the streets, you know. So, anyways, why don't you see if we get any phone call through? Just give them a number. Anybody wants to know about it. I know a lot of folks know about the indictments and the arrest, if you will. Individuals have already been transported to the federal holding facility at Elk River, Minnesota, just north of this. And this comes at an occasion where there are a couple of investigations going on of black leadership in the Twin Cities right now.
Yes, yes. And it's getting pretty tight here. I received a couple of calls, Mr. Edwards, that we talked about in our pre-programming, our post-production meeting, from that same person that contacted me yesterday. I didn't bother to call back, of course, because, you know, I'm on my own. But yeah, that's been going on. And I was just looking at the Star Tribune to see if they updated any of this information as far as what went down today. And no, we don't have any updates as yet. Because I remember last time something happened, right before we got off the air, the Star Tribune had released a story that would eventually appear in the paper tomorrow morning. So
Is this on the indictments or on the investigative report that they are?
On the indictments.
Yeah. That indictment situation is rather interesting. A lot of information has been gathered, a lot of wiretaps, a lot of conversations intercepted, if you will. Again, to your question, there was no presence of any leadership there at the press conference. You would have thought that given that the effort was made to try to provide more safety on the streets for our community and et cetera, you would have thought the leaders would have been there. But, you know, as we said last week's program, when the leaders didn't speak out after an African-American police officer was shot from ambush almost 2 weeks ago now, it's quite clear to me that, you know, there has to be some money involved, I guess. I don't know.
That's usually what it is, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, like I said, no one came out and said anything about the police officer, and you would hope, like, maybe the NAACP or someone from the Urban League or, you know, one of those organizations, African-American Leadership. And the phone lines are open, and they do work. 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. I just called on my landline, Mr. Edwards, to the switchboard. And Blog Talk Radio extends their apology for the start of this show. There was a server connection that did not let us start on time, but they apologize, and they are asking me to extend that to our listeners tonight, and we really appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like I said, we were expecting a call out of Missouri, looking at the need to deal with that also. The Department of Justice made public their findings as it pertains to Ferguson, Missouri. I don't think any of us who are civil rights activists and journalists were surprised. In fact, it was kind of startling, the level of harassment, if you will, and obstruction of justice. 93%, man, of the of the arrest in Ferguson, Missouri, African Americans. 68% of those were given jail time, if you will, not only allowed to plea bargain.
Stand by.
Yeah, we have someone.
Yeah, I'm here, Mr. Edwards.
No, I thought we had somebody.
We do have the caller, and the guest that was a call tonight actually called back and was put right into the queue on air instead of in the queue. And so, but he is available when you're ready.
Well, now let's go ahead and get him. He's been waiting for, about 20 minutes. And why don't you kind of introduce him and talk in terms of what it is he'll talk about.
Okay, this is St. Paul City Council candidate for Ward 1, Terrence Cruz. Mr. Cruz, the Green Party candidate who won his endorsement on this past Sunday. He had no issue in sealing the endorsement, of course, and we just want to talk to him and welcome him to our show. And Mr. Cruz, how are you doing? And welcome.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us what's going on with the Green Party and your run for St. Paul City Council Ward 1. I mean, I know it's early in the game. What do you see as some strategy at this point, this early?
I think it's important that we start getting the message out, start getting out talking to people, building relationships in the city of St. Paul, talking to the people who don't vote or who aren't interested in what the DFL has to offer them as far as policies or platforms. So there's a lot of disenfranchised people in Ward 1 who, like, the last election cycle, voting was down 50%.
Okay, what is your message? What are you going to tell people? I mean, what is your platform? Why don't you give us a little bit of that?
Well, I think the biggest criminal justice reform, so dealing with a certain population, and criminal justice reform is one of our most important issues in this election.
You know,
so
as...
Go ahead, please. No, go ahead.
Okay, you know, I don't know if you looked at the city of St. Paul hiring, minority hiring, and the affirmative action in the EOE, but they have a lot of zeros. They have a lot of zeros in a lot of places where it says African American, Native American, and Asian American. Is that something that you plan on addressing if you win?
Oh, absolutely. Just if you think about the light rail, they didn't get to where they were supposed to be as far as the numbers or the numbers that they were supposed to be with the hiring and things like that. And not just the hiring, but giving contracts to minority business owners, and those type of contracts create wealth for generations and generations to come. And it hires, it allows people of color to get hired. Because when you have minority businesses, hopefully they'll hire minority people, and that would help close the job gap.
Yeah, let me, Mr. Cruz, let me ask the question. R. Edwards here. That's interesting what you just said, because I heard that story time and time and time again for the 2.5-3 years that the light rail was being constructed. In fact, it almost put Arnella's out of business the way they handled that. Now, the thing that I'm peculiar of, because just this afternoon here in Minneapolis, the Public Safety Committee, the Minneapolis City Council received the fourth quarter, Mr. Allen, Mr. Cruz, fourth quarter report from the Department of Civil Rights, which was 2 months overdue.
Oh, wow.
What they basically came in with, that everything was great here in Minneapolis. African Americans are working and at every level and every vineyard and et cetera. And it's interesting because one of the people that is involved in kind of cooking the numbers is the sister of the woman who made those same pronouncements on behalf of the Met Council and basically had the African-American community in St. Paul somewhat stymied. Wanda Kirkpatrick was quoted a number of times in the St. Paul Dispatch, Minneapolis Star Tribune, gentlemen, indicating that things were great. African-Americans were getting contracts. African-Americans working, because any damn fool could go on the job site and see there were no African-Americans working anywhere. Same thing with the $3.5 billion Viking Stadium. What is it that we're going to do with these, handkerchief heads, if you will, who always can be called upon, and you can depend on the fact that they'll be called upon to say there's no problem. And unless the white media says it, or a white politician, or et cetera, our community just seems to be in denial that African American activists know what the heck they're talking about. In this case, you are a activist in the form of a politician running for the council seat in the first ward, which at one time was thought to be safe for the only black candidate or council member to be on the St. Paul City Council. But do you remember the Met Council making all of those statements and quotes and et cetera about how well things were going with the light rail?
Yeah, they were like, we're meeting our quotas and everything. When we made one brother's, like, he made, it was in the millions of dollars, this, you know. But then when we look at the documents, we find out, well, you made only $975. Or something like that, you know.
And not
to be mean or nothing, but I mean, that's a broad question you're asking, Mr. Edwards, and it's a very good question. I went to one of the first when they started talking about the money that they were going to be giving away. They had somebody up there from Met Council and somebody from another organization in St. Paul. I won't put that organization on blast at this time because I am going to reach out to them and hope that they could be better. And with the new CID grants are coming out right now too. But,
okay.
So they were like, you got to have this, and you're gonna have that, and we're gonna come check, and make sure that you're an official business, and then they didn't even really give out any, they didn't award enough people with the contract. But then,
well, let me say how to our listening audience to how this is so much deja vu. In January of 2012, Mr. Albert and I, January 2013, Mr. Albert and I went to a meeting at the then sports facility offices, which were still in the Metropolitan Stadium or the Humphrey, which had not yet been torn down. And the same person that I just named was sitting there with a lawyer from a big prestigious white law firm here on this side of the river, and they were talking about a equity plan and et cetera that was in place. Mm-hmm. It was, in fact, Mr. Allen was about as cold that night as it is tonight here in the Twin Cities. Remember that?
I remember.
And Mr. Allen asked a question about veterans and Velma Corvell. See how we name people. We believe as Blog Radio, we believe in naming people. I understand what you said, and I respect it, and you continue that course. You understand what I'm saying? But Velma Corvell told an outright lie about what kind of legislation was in place for veterans. Mr. Allen is a veteran, honorably discharged from the United States Army, and he took the issue directly to the consul. Velma Corvell said we were lying, and what happened was there was a video of the question being asked by Mr. Allen and Ms. Corvell's response. And at that time, remember, Mr. Allen, Gary Schiff, who no longer is on the Minneapolis City Council, but at that time, Democrat from the 9th Ward, confronted her with that video and with the fact that she lied and lied on Mr. Allen and myself relative to that question. So I can imagine, sir, what it was like those first meetings that you're talking about when all of the BS was being rolled out about how great things were going to be for the African American community in the Rondo-Dale area. So I can have appreciation, and these deja vus need to be reflected on and discussed, because it's like the Fed said today as they talked in terms of the roundup for drug activity and murder, that it's just kind of a pattern in practice. But go ahead on, Mr. Allen. Continue our guests, because this is interesting.
If you go back, you'll remember, I don't have the exact dates, but there was a sister who was supposed to be awarded the contract to put the rails down. She had to, and then they just came and blocked her from even being a part of the light rail project. But she had originally won the bid, and then they took it away from her. Then I was talking to somebody else. I don't like to use, you know.
Use your own style. No problem.
Real,
you were talking to somebody, and what happened?
They would say, well, to meet their quotas, they would just go grab somebody who might be addicted to crack and just be like, you want a job real quick? And then just come grab them and say, here, work on the light rail. Just act like you're doing something. I mean, and that's cool, but you're not really having skilled people. So I think it's a holistic approach. So then we have to go to the schools. I think St. Paul needs, or even the one in Minneapolis, I don't know, but whoever's supposed to be putting out, you know, these construction workers are not doing a good job.
Minneapolis, it's supposedly Summit OIC, who also works the St. Paul area. They're supposed to be doing, but really the only entity that really puts out certified workers and et cetera is Dunwoody. But you raise a very interesting point. Mm-hmm.
So I think it starts there, you know, and then so we have enough skilled workers to work construction projects. So we have to really care about what we're doing. If I'm saying I'm going to be creating construction workers, then I have to really make sure that I'm creating construction workers. And So I think that's one area that we have to look at. And if there are other people or other black organizations who can put out black construction workers, maybe it's time for us to give them a turn, you know?
Well,
so
now we have a black association. In fact, Mr. Allen's, a couple of Mr. Allen's uncles, he has to be modest. I don't have to be. I was there when it was formed. A couple of his uncles are the founders of what was the Black Contracts Association that got changed into the Minority Association. They just have been pushed out of. They were pushed out of the light rail on both sides of the river,
right.
And they definitely were pushed out of the stadium. And so there was a black entity called the Black Contractors Association.
Right.
Like I said, they were cut out, and you know we're all being told that this OIC organization is providing. Now they've been in business for about 12 years, saying that they have turned out hundreds of artisans, if you will, etc.
Right?
But
yeah.
Nobody can ever find them.
and that reflects itself when we go and look at these projects, you know. So that I just think talking to my nephew, he was like. He thinks he could do a better job doing that. So that would be one thing that we would be looking at is trying to just get some new people in place. Or if OIC needs help, you know, maybe we can help them do what they're supposed to be doing. And that's not to be, you know, I love those people over there, but we do have to do a better job.
Well, here's the thing, though. I don't know how much help they really need. They received $700,000. From
$700,000.
Yeah, $700,000 they received for just to train people to work on the stadium. There is an investigative report which is basically going to say that they've already been given $300,000 and probably have provided maybe 8 or 9 workers. See, Mr. Allen and I are not as high on OIC as maybe others are. By the way, there used to be an OIC in St. Paul,
downtown St. Paul. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was the same forerunner of the OIC, founded by the late Reverend Leon Sullivan in Philadelphia. It used to be a great organization. Anything else that you'd like to share with the listening audience as pertains to your candidacy?
I think criminal justice reform is very important, but not as in just like police brutality. Dealing with the issues surrounding police brutality, not just because it's popular or not just because there's money for social equity, but because it costs young black men a lot of money. When we come in contact with police, it's costing black people with their housing, with their education, and obtaining jobs. So we want to start
that. Right. Let me ask a procedural question. Now, in that you have the endorsement of the Green Party, what are the rules in St. Paul? Do you go directly, because there obviously can be, there'll be no primary, Green Party primary, do you go directly into the general election?
Yes, we're heading right into the election. So we're just waiting.
Okay, and when is that election so that our listeners and those that were part of the 50% that didn't vote in the last contest, when is the election date, the primary, I mean the general election?
That's going to be this November.
Okay. And that would always be the first Tuesday in November. I mean, that's kind of the law of the land. All right. Well,
absolutely.
We want to wish you the best. In fact, probably in midsummer, Mr. Allen, we would invite Mr. Cruz back. Let us know what kind of progress is being made, how the Democratic machine in St. Paul and in and around the First Ward are handling him. Okay.
We'll definitely have that. I appreciate you being there. Sorry about the technical difficulties tonight, but we will have you on occasion to kind of give us an update and talk to your constituents. All right?
No problem. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, all right. Thank you, Mr. Cruz. All right.
Thank you.
All right.
You know, Mr. Edwards, it's really funny because, you know, the Met Council, I went down and talked to Kirkpatrick. I talked to MnDOT. And these are people, especially people in MnDOT, using their privilege to stand on your back, to be taller than you are, to direct what they're going to do. Now, in the beginning, it sounded sweet, Mr. Edwards. They said that, okay, we're going to build this light rail, and people from here to here is going to get jobs. But if you look at the reality of it, you look from Snelling Avenue down to Dale Street or even further down to one of those cross street, Rice Street, and maybe half a mile on each side in that geographic area, those people were not working on the light rail at all whatsoever. So you had people within walking distance to the light rail that had zero opportunity to participate, even though their tax dollars helped build the light rail, the Green Line. And so
absolutely.
And so we're finding out a lot of people are not happy, but I remember the business. You said Arnello's almost went out of business, just to talk about this for real quick for a second. Well,
yeah.
I sat down in this meeting, and they said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to provide advertising and marketing for these businesses and some mini grants to make sure that they can survive and sustain and be open while we're being the light rail. I haven't heard of one business step forward and say they got a penny from any of those people down there. Ever.
And I think that Mr. Cruz, Green Party candidate for the first ward seat in St. Paul, would fully concur with you, because that's been the intel and scuttlebutt and whatever else that's come out of what's happened in St. Paul. I mean, the light rail now there in St. Paul is done. African-American community is lucky if they picked up $15,000 or $20,000, really, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
All right, let's get the call.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Yes, sir, go ahead. 9354, you're live on the air. They don't want to say anything.
Oh, okay. Well, moving on, coming back to the meeting today in the Minneapolis City Council, Velma Corvell's operation, I want to repeat that again, issued a fourth quarter report for 2014, though it's March 2015. But, sometimes folks working real hard. Also, Kip Brown. You remember Kip Brown?
I remember Kip Brown,
Yes, a resident of Robbinsdale, Golden Valley. Kip Brown was talking about the problem with complaints on police and et cetera, and I was really puzzled by Kip Brown's position. That I don't know if he was saying complaints are up or down. It was fairly difficult. One of the stations had a reporter standing there in front of the fourth precinct, and he was holding what was supposed to be a report. So this was a day, as it pertains to the Minneapolis City Council, for a lot of cooked numbers.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? And when we say cooked numbers on this program, we're talking about information that is totally erroneous and bogus, if you will. What Cam Gordon, who is allegedly a Green Party member, but you and I know is really a Democrat, Cam Gordon has really been leading the charge on behalf of the liberals, of talking in terms of there's no problem, that there's just a great opportunity here in Minneapolis and that all the black folks are working and making money. And by the way, we're going to be waiting and looking in a couple weeks from our from the chairman of the Council on Black Minnesotans, because we were hoping that Mr. Lawrence would be able to get that information from the state commissioner and from Mr. Tittle and from Mr. King and others about 32%, right? Remember that? And it was this program that broke the story and the numbers. 280,000 hours at the end of January worked on the stadium, right, Don?
Yes, sir.
280,000 hours. That's probably now up to around 295,000, maybe 290,000. So it's been kind of cold out there, but them guys are working. There's no time off. Got to bring this baby in on schedule. That'd be July of 2016. Got to get ready for the Super Bowl in 2018. White folks got to make money, man.
Yeah, exactly.
So down at City Council this afternoon, it was the real dog and pony show. With the Civil Rights Department indicating that there is no problem whatsoever, man, with employment and opportunity. So we're just in a great situation here. We're just in the best. Now, that makes me wonder why so much dope is being sold in the black communities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Now, is it because it's a part of the disparity that has taken place of a community that does not have assets? Or is it just that we got so much dope money, and dope is so plentiful, and everybody's making so much money that the community seems to have a portfolio that says that we are right up there with the white community in Minnesota?
Well,
how should we take it, Don? What do you think?
Okay. Oh, that's a loaded question, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. What was the deal? They busted some African-Americans, some black men, okay? That don't mean the dope disappeared. That just means that they caught some black brothers with some dope, okay? That's all that means.
Okay.
Okay, and so you can still go out there and get you whatever you want any time of day, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, period, okay?
Okay.
And so with that said, you know, I understand the dog and pony show and the need to deal with the gangs and things like this, but we got people going to the governor trying to get $26 million and use $10 million of that to get rid of the gang. You know, so it don't make no sense all the way around. My final conclusion, final answer, the dope is...
Well, let me ask you this, Dante, because this is one of the questions that kind of came up in the press conference this afternoon. Are there certain gangs and certain individuals that have protection from within even the civil rights community? Not talking about protection from the police or the authority. I mean, I hear people saying that. Are there people, really, that are involved in criminal enterprise that actually have protection?
I just don't, you know, with that, you know, Mr. Edwards, I'm just not going to no gang summit in a church basement. I'll just put it like
okay,
that.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we have a caller. We have another caller.
Let's see if the caller comes in. Caller?
You're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hello. Am I live?
Yes, you are, sir.
Yes, sir. M, well, welcome, my brother. You look like you've returned from England. What's happening? How you doing?
Yeah,
what's your
yeah.
question? By the way, let me ask this. Mr. Allen, do we have an extra 10 minutes? Is Blog Radio going to give us at least 10 for that 15 minutes that we were shorted, or what's the deal? Or do we cut off at 9:30?
We started at late, and we're going till 10.
Oh, we're going to 10. Oh, okay. Welcome, and what's your observation and your question?
Well, thank you. You know, always the discussion is very, very interesting and enlightening. You know, this is the kind of thing that, you know, I mean, I listen to the airwaves and, radio, read the, it's been referred to as the Johannesburg Times. I read these papers, and I don't seem to really get informed. You know, I don't really, you know, and I noticed you gentlemen were mentioning about the disparities and the statistical information that just really puts our community pretty much at the bottom, especially when it comes to talking about African Americans. And so with that being said, I know last week I think you had a gentleman from the Council of Minnesota, Black Minnesotans.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, sir, Mr. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Lawrence, yes, that was a very informative program where he made a lot of nice flowery statements about things that they're doing to observe and to study research, but I just don't see the cohesive action. I mean, perfect example is how, you know, week after week, you know, you and, you know, Mr. Allen has told the community about how all these construction contracts, all of these things come into the city of Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, on the surface and for a lot of people is booming.
Yes, it is.
But for those people that are at the bottom, see, there doesn't seem to be much of a way out for that. I mean, money is thrown in the direction and said, okay, here, you guys, here's a little bit of money. Let's see if you guys can make it happen. And there just doesn't seem to be a real cohesive, informed, and strong program to, you know, to make these things happen. Now, let's see the numbers. Let's make it transparent. If they're hiring all these people and things are so great, well, let's see the numbers. Let's talk to the people that they're hiring. Let's see.
Well,
the
you know, Mr. Lawrence, I'm on the program. Mr. Lawrence promised. In fact, he said he was writing it down as we were talking. And I know that my colleague, Mr. Allen, has reminded them a couple times over the last couple weeks of the April 1st deadline that we all agreed upon over the air with mm-hmm. you know, people listening. That they would have those numbers. You know, we were provided with numbers from a source, obviously an anonymous source. The numbers were you know, humongous. I mean, just massive. 280,000 hours, man, worked by people of color, if you will. And there should be a breakdown of how many of those hours worked by African Americans. In fact, let me say this to you, M.N., that I've got you here, and this is even kind of a surprise to my colleague, Mr. Allen. One of the things that I'm hearing, gentlemen, from the investigation that is being conducted by the Star Tribune, because apparently somebody has fallen into disfavor with their white bosses, white handlers. I'm told, gentlemen, that out of the zip code, which is identified in the Legislative Act, is that 135 individuals, primarily African-Americans, 135 out of 55411 and 55405, if I'm not mistaken. That would be the area just on the other side of Olson Highway, Mr. Allen and him.
Mm-hmm.
135 African-Americans out of the poverty-stricken area are working right now on the stadium. Okay? That's what...
Okay, Mr. Edwards, Mr. Edwards, more particularly, you just rang something in my head. Do you remember?
Okay.
Remember in January where you just mentioned this about half an hour ago while Cruz was on the line. Remember we went down there and Velma Corbell and the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights had not done an equity report or study.
Now.
Remember the document that I brought in that said there would be about 150 black people working down at the stadium, the equity report that we did actually, and wrote it up, you know, per government standards, and I actually offered it to them, okay? And so we were more close, but the thing is, in reality, if you crunch the numbers, and if you go through based on the email that not we sent out, that they sent out, there is less than 55 people of color working on the stadium, and there's even less black people working on the stadium.
But then,
now,
see,
let me just say this, and M, before we hear from you on this, because here's what really caught my attention as I've heard the discussion amongst the heavy hitters of the white community. A number of years ago, and it's all in the record. In fact, I filed a complaint with the Civil Rights Department under Michael Jordan at that time, and I oftentimes have referred to the document on television, my television program, and et cetera. I filed a case. It took them a year to sanitize it and finally throw it out. They had to bring in some big lawyers and et cetera, but I got a good break. Because the young man at that time at the Civil Rights Department who was head of the investigative unit was a man by the name of Ronald Brandon. In fact, they tried to shoot him through the grease, and the city had to pay him, a gentleman, $180,000 as he went out the door. But Mr. Brandon and I worked very closely. This was, you know, back in 2007. And I had a specific number, and in fact, it's part of what I had shared with my colleague, Mr. Allen, on how you analyze, make an assessment, and et cetera. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you that powerful newspaper down there, if you will, is sitting on a number for the Twins Stadium that was actually the number of people of color that got any kind of employment in exchange for $300,000. Now, I'm gonna play a guessing game. I'm going to give each of you an opportunity to give me a figure of how many. Now, there were 1,270 workers that worked on that beautiful Target Field down there. Now, tell me how many of that 1,270 workers down there, how many do you think, M, we'll start with you, you're our guest, what do you think the number of African Americans were that are now being identified as having actually worked on the site?
You know, I would say that they would probably throw out some figures of 10%, 15%. But again, the surface figures, I mean, in what capacity? I mean, were you holding a broom? Were you holding a dustpan one day and you were late a few minutes and then you're gone? I mean, numbers.
But just give me a figure. I mean, but let's say that they were working and drawing a check, and that they were identified at that time in 2007, 2008, as they finished that beautiful stadium there on the edge of downtown Minneapolis. they were giving out numbers, and our good friends at OIC and other places were confirming those numbers. So just, again, I repeat, about 1,275 workers, construction workers, worked on the site. So what do you think the number? You said 10%. That would be about, what, 180, 190 workers, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mr. Allen?
I'm going to say 55.
Okay. The number is 35.
Woo!
The number is 35. The Minneapolis Star Tribune has that number, and they're now trying to make a political decision on if they will reveal that.
but
30.
Mr. Edwards,
sir, gentlemen. Go ahead.
They can reveal that. You know, this will be a trifecta. No black leadership comment when the policeman got shot over north. No black leadership comment when the this drug bust today and all this stuff going on. And if this comes out, we're going to hear crickets. You know,
man, I would hope not. Because my leaders have been, you know, they've been eating good, man, and driving big cars and moving into other locations, setting their girlfriends up you know, hideaways and et cetera. I mean, I don't want to get But, gentlemen, the number on the ballpark is just 35.
I mean, that's pathetic. I mean, this shows not even an effort is being made, you know, to strive for some type of equity. And as, you know, Mr. Allen is saying, you know, where is the black leadership to show outrage about this, to show, wait a minute, you're saying that we've got these disparities. What are we doing about it? Where is the concrete holding people accountable? I mean, I hate to say it, but I mean, it just seems like the black community, at least, is somewhat powerless.
Gentlemen, I'm afraid it is. I knew during the time that, and I repeat again for anybody that wants to come in and say, well, what would you do? Would you do a booty? Would you do y'all just run your mouth? Hey, yours truly, acting under color law, I filed that complaint. That complaint was under investigation for an entire year. Michael Jordan, who was the director at that time, was having a heck of a time Ron Brandon was fighting him every step of the way. We knew the numbers on my television programs and my columns. I kept shooting it out, until I joined up with Mr. Allen in 2008 and at least found somebody to partner with. It was kind of lonely out there because these same individuals, some of whom we had talked, I mean, they were on the attack. I mean, you know, they were saying that that's ridiculous. Negro doesn't know what he's talking about. Just stirring stuff up and et cetera. Everything is honky-dory. And I hear people still walking around talking about how well things went. In fact, we couldn't get anybody to even talk in terms of track construction being a pass-through. Okay?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Nope.
Track construction. I mean, you know, hey, that ain't nothing personal, and I don't want folks to get upset with us and et cetera, but the fact of the matter is there's the documents that show them on the site indicating a number far in excess of 35. But what's happened, see, you know, one thing about it, white folks will basically, in situations in which they can make a fool out of black people, will come together. And they have finally certified to the Star Tribune, the big, largest paper in the state of Minnesota. In fact, they tell jokes, gentlemen. I have to tell you, in the last couple of weeks, I've heard statements made about us as a community and people.
Boy,
they make jokes.
Boy,
they said we couldn't even find that many Negroes to have cooked barbecue for the 1,235 or 40 all white boys and girls that work down there on the target field. Gentlemen, you're getting ready to have the same exact number. Numerical number is going to come out on this Viking stadium.
Well, you know, this is the same old, same old. You know, as my dad would say, this is the same old soup just warmed over. I mean, it's the same thing that we continue to get fed. And what it is, it's almost a psychological type of a thing where you're told one thing, but then they just do something totally different. I mean, they do not call things what they are. You know, I'll give just one example. Is in the history of lynching, okay, in this country, sordid, one of the most sordid, heinous crimes against another citizen in the history of this country, mostly perpetrated
human beings. That's
black
right.
Men.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, but by mm-hmm. calling it a lynching, all of a sudden you've created this thing in the mind that says, "Oh well, this was done by a mob of people. We don't know who did it." All of a sudden, we have a Negro that's strung up and drunk through the street. He's dead. He's on a what? We have no idea. It's a crowd of people. No, no, that's a murder. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And that's a crime.
Yes.
That's a murder. And these people who did it needs to be brought to the light. You
that's
need
right.
to hunt these people down. That's a crime. I don't care what you can call it, whatever you want, but it's a murder.
And by the way, gentlemen, we don't have to go to the South. We had it right here.
Right here. Right here.
In Duluth,
but
Minnesota, 1921. Three
the
Negroes.
The act itself
yes.
is a murder. But by calling it that, see, it creates this thing where it's somewhere we're not going to look for somebody. We're not going to have a trial. We don't have a person. They don't even look for some. They don't even look for the perpetrator.
No, gentlemen. No, they definitely don't. It was time to begin to push the figures out. As we said, the Star Tribune is making a political decision how it will reveal this information, if you will. The chairman of the Public Safety Committee is aware that these numbers are all bogus. These are bogus numbers that gentlemen mm-hmm. they put together up there today. And that the Civil Rights Department, I grew out of it, was born, quote unquote, out of the Civil Rights Department Commission and et cetera in a great uprising in this city by my community. And so it's something gentlemen and M understands it even better because we are closer, I already know, to the same millennium. But I got to tell you, man, I just think that maybe it's time to sunset, Mr. Allen, the Civil Rights Department and the commission in Minneapolis, and just go ahead and call it, as M has just said, call it for what it is. Look, we don't need no formal structure to look after the rights, particularly of African Americans. Let's just do like they're doing in Ferguson, you understand, and just beat the Negroes down if they raise questions, even though the Department of Justice came in with a hell of a report today, gentlemen. In fact, let me do this, and let me kind of divert. M, you took the time to go into Ferguson yourself.
Yes.
Can you share with us? You've certainly earned the right.
Yes.
What was your take on the Department of Justice's findings this afternoon?
Well, I mean, it couldn't be surprising. You know, I mean, this is like I say, an act happens, everyone sees it, but it's called something else. I mean,
okay.
Of course, it's. What's going on in Ferguson, finally, you know, they're shedding some light on this. But it isn't only in Ferguson.
Absolutely. In fact, there are probably 40 or 60 communities right there in St. Louis County that the same thing is going on. That's how tragic this is. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. But your observation about a community of African Americans that have – in my mind, definitely, they did not need to be vindicated in any shape, form, or fashion. We had a source in Missouri that is in a very sensitive position that shared with us during the summer. And then you provided to us a very in-depth analysis as you were there. But I feel glory, if you will, for the African-American community of Ferguson, because they said this is what this was about,
mm-hmm.
and commentators and white folks and that idiot. Can you believe, gentlemen, that kind of report that came out today that neither the white mayor, Knowles, or that idiot Jackson at least had the white common decency? Notice what I said, gentlemen, the white common decency of resigning. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, I watched him. Well, the chief didn't even show up. He didn't even come out. He didn't come out of whatever hole he's in. He didn't bother to come out. But this clown, Knowles, who thinks that he's glib and smooth, you know what I mean? But he wouldn't take any questions. But he said, we're working on making some changes here in Ferguson. I mean, it was just outrageous.
Well, you know,
what has happened, man. But I feel good for the black population, for those black folk, that stood up and told white commentators and some Negroes like Don Lennon the reason that they were hostile. And folks were saying, oh, that couldn't be.
Yeah.
That 93%, gentlemen, in closing on this and want to go to the end, 93% of the arrest in Ferguson, Missouri, African-Americans.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, the first thing that came to mind when I saw this headline in the paper, you know, feds say police routinely violate rights in Ferguson. Well, I mean, it could have just been water's wet, okay? This just in. What else is new? Of course they routinely violate rights, you know, but it takes a study, now we're saying this, but I think the protest is really what led to making them have to make a statement like that.
I think the same. Mr. Allen, what your observation, sir? I mean, you're a younger man than M and I, as example. A generation that maybe said, oh, those old guys were a little bit too radical, over the top, and et cetera. I mean, your observation, sir.
Well, when I look, I perused the report, and I found it very insulting because some of the jokes, there was jokes that the Justice Department had found out, and one of them was when President Obama got elected as President of the United States, the officers joked and said that, oh, he's not going to last long because no black man can keep a job for 4 years. And so I found that very...
And referred to him as a chimpanzee.
I found that very interesting, but, you know, that was their culture and their environment. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't choose to change that, and everybody knew it from the top down. It's just like corporate America. If you have that environment where there's no black folks in there, and it's going to be like that. And that's happened in every realm, in education, in finance, I mean, all corporate, everywhere, all around. And so Ferguson had the same thing going on. So, I mean, what are you going to do? How can we change it? No one reads anymore. No one listens to the roadmaps that some of the great black authors have already written and showed you how to navigate this whiteness. Mm-hmm. You know? And so with that said, we're in trouble, Mr. Edwards. Bottom line.
Oh, gentlemen, I fully concur. I had no way in the world I would separate myself out or even differ with you. I've been saying it as an old timer, if they like to point out, we're in big trouble. And actually, what these folks are doing is that they're just waiting for Obama to leave the White House on January 20th, 2017.
Yeah.
And really the Republicans are kind of sending the message right now. I mean, that stunt that they pulled, and we need to talk about it because, you know, our Jewish friends get away with a lot of stuff against our interests. I mean, that deal they pulled with Israel's prime minister and Boehner should be taken out and flogged along the shores of the banks of the Ohio. That was the ultimate insult. There has not been another insult of that magnitude, gentlemen. That now joins the incident, and it was interesting, too, because that congressman's name was also Wilson, when the white congressman screamed from his seat in that sacred gallery, lie, you know. And now we have the Speaker of the House, a man not from the South, gentlemen, but from Northern State, Ohio, from the district in Cincinnati. And he invites this man to come here. This is Rayleigh, this Jew, to come here. And this man just blasts and use. And, you know, like someone said, just what, 5 weeks ago, President Barack Obama stood in that very at that very podium in giving his State of the Union message.
Yeah.
And this man came here and he called Barack Obama everything but the black son of God. You know,
at the end, Boehner shook hands at the end.
Boehner probably whispered to him and said, you kicked that NIG's behind. I love it. I mean, this is their statement. There has not, gentlemen, I'm a historian and research it and et cetera. There has never been a incident of disrespect in the sanctuary of the Congress other than white congressman calling Mr. White, the last African American in 1901, not to be another African-American in the Congress of the United States until 1927, as they whistled and told, well, I have to say it, nigger, get out of here. You know, there has not been that kind of disdain and disrespect. But in this case, that was a congressman. And what happened today was that this man defiled the president of the United States, and folks around him playing like they want to debate it. Well, he has a right to come tell us about Iran.
No, he doesn't.
You know, nobody, Em, and I know you have an understanding of this, nobody talks about what the Jews got a bomb. They got a, they, in fact, they have about, according now to the Iranian intelligence group that's telling on them, they have about 126 nuclear-style weapons, gentlemen. Nobody ever talks about, well, but the Israelis have a nuclear capability. You know, but anything else, Em, because we certainly appreciate it, because this allows us, this kind of drives the juices, if you will, for us to be engaged on issues that we're really not, as a black community, we're not allowed to talk about, are we?
Well, I mean, I think the whole thing is we can't be silent. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, we really have to, you know, really have to continue to keep that spirit alive. You know, I mean, there are people that have come before us to get us to this point, and a lot of us now are asleep at the wheel from what I'm seeing. And, you know, we need to wake up again. We need to wake up and say, yeah, okay, yeah, we have our iPods, we have our computers, we have all this, and everything seems fine and comfy. Well, it really isn't. You know, you're being to believe that. You're being made to believe that, and you're being lulled into a comfort zone that is just going to lull you into, all of a sudden the ground will be gone, you're going to fall into that pit. So that's why you have to keep this thing in the forefront. The work that you and Mr. Allen are doing, you know, I certainly applaud it, hope to join it, hope to be a part of it, and hope that we can rally our community again. And hopefully, you know, not just, you know, when I'm talking about our community, now I'm talking about the Twin Cities area, of course, but then nationwide too. I mean, we see these things in Ferguson. We see these things happening in other places, and they do affect here. With our national media, everything that happens, certainly in this country and even around the world now, it affects us. And
yes, it does.
These are things that you, in particular, you continue to bring out in your program, Mr. Edwards, and on the radio to the community. And hopefully people are listening to this and they can kind of, oh, wow, going through their day-to-day struggles and get some idea of, you know, wow, this is kind of really what we're up against, and hopefully do something for their selves and their families to, you know, call attention to these ongoing inequities, and let's kind of turn the page on this.
Right, because it's really all about them. It's about their future of their children,
right,
and their survival. Thank you, Em. We appreciate you joining us once again.
My pleasure. Until next time.
All right. Mr. Allen, you know, the phone lines are open. In fact, we're interested to see if there's anybody out there that wants to reflect on what happened in the Congress of the United States with the address to the American Congress by the Israeli Prime Minister. I'm just interested to see if there's anyone that has any reflections, if they think that was appropriate, or if they even, you know, understand what the international consequences are. So, yeah, let's throw the phone number out there one time.
Sure.
We've got about,
sure,
what, Mr. Allen, 16, 17 minutes.
17 minutes, the number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And the lines are
right,
wide
sounds
open.
Sounds like our communication is kind of back in. Log Radio must have been working pretty hard on it. Of course, we are one of their premier shows. And we appreciate their technical attentiveness, if you will. Anything else? I mean, we've had a couple of items. We're trying to get some reflection from leadership and et cetera. We've got some dates, if you will, some materials and et cetera that have been promised to us. And, boy, I hope we see it. You know, Mr. Allen, we're coming into the spring of the year, and young men, young women are going to be taking to the streets, if you will. And by the way, let's do this. And it's really too bad, because I would have liked to have had her on the program, invited her. We have not talked about the toughness. I mean, this prosecutor, Ms. Johnson, in Bloomington, who is going to prosecute, is it 11 protesters as an outgrowth of the Christmas thing at MOA, at Mall of America. Don, what is your take about what is the real goal of this the city attorney for the city of Bloomington, Minnesota?
It's a bad PR move for him, number one. They should have just walked away from it. It's going to cost taxpayers a lot of money to for people to be found not guilty and released or slapped on the hand with a $35, $50 fine, you know, because no one's doing no hard jail time behind protesting. And so it is the a lot of the white right and a few, well, actually quite a few white liberals that want to maintain their sanctuary out there at the Mall of America. Because, Mr. Harris, I heard an interesting news report regarding this very same thing, that the Mall, quote, the Mall of America warned the protesters that this was private property.
Yes, yes.
Now I understand their point of view, but, I mean, it's public use. You get a tax break out there in Bloomington from the city of Bloomington and the state of Minnesota. So it becomes private property when people want to come out and speak their mind. So I found that pretty interesting. But I guess my point is that it's a waste of time. Move on. I don't think that, you know, this time next year that we'll even remember the protest at the Mall of America.
Well, only if a jury finds, because I do tend to disagree with you that people, you know, if you don't have money or if you have a particular racial complexion, and that's come out in the report out of Ferguson. A lot of black folk who couldn't pay them $40 or $45, $50 tickets went to jail. I mean, you know, thrown in jail. I think that the way that a prosecutor or city attorney Johnson, the way that she's waxing and the kind of, you know, I'm the iron lady, you know, in the tradition of Margaret Thatcher, the former and late Prime Minister of Great Britain. I think that if she could get a conviction, she would ask a Hennepin County District Court judge to give these people some time. Now, the reason I say that is that, you know, MOA and the Bloomington Police and the city attorney's office set this up real nice when they went to the homes of three of the lead protesters and told them that it's private property and there will be consequences for you if you come in and demonstrate and cause any quote-unquote economic hardship for the big white, you know, stores, corporations, and et cetera. So, you know, they may make that mistake, Mr. Allen. They may try to give these people, if convicted, time in jail.
We'll see what happens with that. That's going to be they're going to fight that. I mean, all these people pulled together. I mean, I'm just going to watch it from the sidelines, but there was because, you know, I don't even do those community type things anymore. But I'll just leave it at that.
I understand. But I think it's something that the phones are open. Like we said, again, I'm interested in reflections by people with regards to the way that President Barack Obama continues to be just absolutely disrespected, if you will. You know, people seem to hide behind the fact of a lack of understanding and knowledge of history by pretending that, well, I you know, did an incident like that happen before in 1921 or et cetera? It's never happened before, that kind of disrespect by giving an invitation to a person. And by the way, under the rules of the Congress, no head of state is supposed to be able to address the Congress, in this case, the House of Representatives, if they are 3 weeks away from a national election, right?
Yeah.
And Netanyahu is running his Likud party, is running in a pretty tight contest with the Labor Party there in Israel. And it just fascinated me that John Boehner and others just dismissed their own rules by saying, oh, no, we're inviting him, want him to come in, and we want him to do a hatchet job on this black boy, Barack Obama, who has overstepped himself, if you will. I mean, these are folks down there that have gotten so upset and are so obsessed with destroying the legacy of Barack Obama, that they're prepared to shut down Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. On one hand, they're telling us about the terrorist threat, but it, their hatred and spite of this black president is causing them to say, well, we will make the borders of America unsafe as we, quote-unquote, punish this African-American president. I mean, you know, do you see it that way? I mean, because that's where I see it.
Yeah, I see it exactly that way, and I think it's nuts. But, I mean, that's what they're trying to – these people are trying to get away with really stepping on the president's hands and his head at the same time. And he, like you said, there's rules. The guy is 3 weeks away from his election. There are people out there fighting because they're saying that he's making the whole world be more anti-Jew, anti-Semitism is rising all-time high from London to California. And so they want him out. They don't want him to get reelected. But, you know, this guy comes here and he sits in the well there and where he's not supposed to be. And so, yeah, these Republicans, they're going to have a wake-up call eventually here.
Yeah, pretty quick. All right. Any calls holding, Don?
No calls holding, sir.
Okay. Well, look, we're not going to just kind of let the listeners know. We're not going to back off of this. And we assume that knowing the Star Tribune on this one, they will probably not print their final piece until just a tad after 11, which will make it impossible for anybody else to do anything, particularly the electronic media.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just trying to get a feel on what kind of quotes are in tomorrow morning's edition, because I haven't seen anything. I've been monitoring the television stations. I've seen common folk. I'm talking about common folk.
Mm-hmm.
But for those that are dependent on being close to the well, if you will, I don't see anybody saying anything, and what we said earlier in tonight's program is that we've seen this happen with the shooting of an African-American officer, if you will, police officer. Do you realize that no one has still said anything at all about that young officer?
Nobody. No one said anything. Yeah.
I mean, nothing. I mean,
there's not even anything in the Insight News, Mr. Edwards. There's nothing except one of the local reverends from Old North trying to be legitimate. And so, I mean, that troubles me right there. So, I mean, they don't say anything. I mean, they're too busy talking about me and you.
Well, keep on keeping on. You know, by the way, there is a new, on that particular note, there is a new police. Well, now, let me put it like this. A new public safety fighting committee that has been formed out in the city of Minneapolis and the northern suburbs. A couple of black ministers have announced that they are, in fact, on the, God dang, what is the date, Don? Is it the 19th or the 25th that they are having a a public forum at one of the churches out there in Brooklyn Park. Harding Smith and the Reverend Jerry McAfee are announcing that they're on a panel, a leadership panel. This was kind of similar to the panel they had at the Pan-African Conference entitled Civic Leaders and Leaders of the, and what they do. But anyways, they're having a panel. They've got Sheriff Richard Stanek. They may have County Attorney Mike Freeman. One of the things that was pointed out to me is that they did not invite a single African American law enforcement officer, and they're talking about the divide between the African American community and law enforcement. Don't you think that maybe it would have been good to get at least a black police officer, male or female?
Yeah, ain't nobody going to get a word in edgewise with that panel. So, but yeah, it would have been smart to have someone there, besides.
Yeah, because if I'm not mistaken, the panel is 9 or 10. Reverend Harding, Harding N. Smith is the moderator. And they say it was supposed to be a three-city tour, but I think they actually meant that they were going to have three chiefs or high-ranking officers. Though they brought the chief of the Roseville police department in. Now, of course, Roseville is in Ramsey County. I'm wondering why they didn't ask Chief Tim Smith of the St. Paul Police Department to be on the panel.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. But what they're saying is that this is a part of organizing to convey to Governor Mark Dayton that they are competent and able, and that $26 million should be coming their way.
Yeah, get that 26, get that money, get that money and run. Well, Mr. Harris, we're down. Oh, okay, we're cool. We got six more minutes. I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong
clock. We got time, Don. Yeah. We've got. And like I said, the phone line is open for any kind of last call that anybody wants to make. I'm really interested in seeing how the Star Tribune deals with a couple of major stories that they're on top of right now, the indictments and the arrest of young African-Americans, if you will, and then this investigation that's going on about that the numbers aren't correct and that African-Americans really aren't being hired on major projects or minor projects and et cetera. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Oh, by the way, I hear an interesting story. I understand that the McKnight Foundation withdrew its annual contribution to the Urban League of Minneapolis.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's been in place for over 20 years. That is really something needed to keep an organization afloat. I just would not want to see our Urban League go the way of the St. Paul Urban League, which is no longer around. Yeah.
By the way,
the head of the Urban League was in town, but I didn't see anything in depth in the paper. Did you pick up anything on the cyber network?
Oh, no, nothing. Not at all.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Right, so he didn't talk about the future of the Urban League in America or nothing like that?
No, not a thing. Not a thing.
Okay. Well, let me say this from the sports thing as we began to wrap. I really like the way that Minnesota basketball fans responded a little over a week ago to the re-arrival, if you will, of Kevin Garnett, KG. I was happy for him, and I think he's going to help this franchise mature, if you know what I mean. And I know you're not a sports fan. I know you're not into that, and et cetera, but this young man brings a lot. Of course, 39 years old now, been in the game for over 20 years, but he brings a lot to the table of competition and competitiveness, if you will. And I was just kind of happy to see him return. You know, franchise needs it. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree 100%.
Yeah. 100%. And, of course, also, okay, you know, Kevin still has his foundation. Uh-oh.
Oh yeah.
Maybe some of the leaders can ask Kevin for some kind of handout.
Yeah, they'll be at him eventually. They'll find someone's cousin, sister's brother that knows him, and try to be at the right place at the right time, talking with their hands out, looking like puppy dogs. Yeah, I mean it's a shameful thing, Mr. Edwards, what we have going on here. But like I said, you know, you can't go into those circles or into those rooms and speak sense to them. That's not what they want to hear. You know, I mean, there's some of us that have to get up and go to work every day. We can't wait for Governor Dayton's $26 million or a grant from here or a grant from there. We have to move and keep moving. And so,
there are many of you that have to do that. You're absolutely right. You have to be competitive in a very competitive world. By the way, we begin to be remiss if we did not point out that I am concerned for the vitality, and M touched on it in his call and conversation with us. Target, they're saying thousands of jobs in downtown Minneapolis will be shredded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What that does again is it saturates the job market downtown. Every few years, Ms. Edwards, you know, I worked in downtown Minneapolis from 2003 to 2010, and every couple of years, one of those big companies, Ameriprise, IDS Financial Service, who else is down there? A few of them. They shed some fat, and those employees kind of scatter, and anything that's open down there is filled up rather quickly. And then you have a downtime, but it's a mechanism. I mean, it's unfortunate with Target, because Target tried to go into Canada like they knew what they were doing,
And they were using
that was a disaster. $2 billion failure. $2 billion.
Yeah. And so they're running into Canada, but they're not understanding the Canadian culture, which is a socialist culture. They go up there with this Minnesota nice stuff that's not going to fly. There you go.
Yeah.
It's not going to fly at all. And so, I mean, and, you know, they're not going to listen to me or you or anyone else. It's just like Best Buy. I'm waiting for them to just bury themselves. But anyway, that's a whole different show. Hey, we'll talk about
that. Well, they showed a quarterly profit, and the newspaper wrote a number of articles in the last couple of days that Best Buy is back. You know, like you said, only time will tell. In fact, this is the same. These are the same forecasters, analysts, and experts, if you will, 99.5% white, if you will, who said it was one of the greatest moves ever made for Target to enter the Canadian market. See, they should have brought you aboard as a financial advisor to have reminded them that Canada, as you just said, is a socialist society.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They do not embrace, contrary to what you may think just because they're on the other side of the border, they do not embrace the same approach to capitalism as we do in the United States. And that's hard for a lot of people to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
no,
that's a totally different mindset.
Absolutely.
And I guess it caused the bright minds at Target, it cost them $2 billion, and it's going to cost 3,000 or 4,000 people their jobs. So, anyways, we can let James Brown take us on home, man. It's been a good program, good hour and a half.
Yeah. There we go.
All right.